Welcome back to the Hoops Temple podcast. I am Aaron Schroeder, Possible Chairs on TikTok. Joining me, Jack, or Jack the Kings fan on TikTok. Jack, how you doing?
It's good to be here. I'm excited following a overtime preseason game.
Overtime preseason loss to the Warriors. Now we're going to do an in-depth Kings preview heading into the 2023-2024 season. We're going to break it down player by player. We'll end the podcast with some league-wide standing predictions and how we match up against some other teams. But Jack, we won 47 games last year, made the playoffs for the first time, looking to continue to build that stability and that continued success. I think we made the right moves in the offseason to do that. Just kind of ran it back. Just said, okay, we're going to win 45 games again. Let's try that again. So let's just go through our starting lineup, starting in the point guard position. Year seven for De'Aaron Fox. Do you feel old hearing that?
I do feel old. It feels like just yesterday he was a rookie with the big Goku hair. I don't miss that era because he's improved so much as a player, but I kind of miss the vibes that he brought into the league, especially if you remember watching the UCLA versus Kentucky duels between Fox and Ball. That was kind of like a fun little rivalry. So it's crazy to think that was 7 years ago. But hey, we're here.
Man, the Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox rivalry. I do remember that. I remember the Lonzo Ball ducking Fox allegations.
Right,
and
exactly.
At this point, like, Ball's out of the league, which is pretty sad to say. But
can't remember what it was. It was like a round of 16, their final one in the March Madness tournament. Can't remember what. I remember watching it, though. Yeah.
But for De'Aaron Fox, we're looking at someone that's always had crazy breakaway speed. Year after year, he's voted as the fastest player in the league. But this past season, he added just a brutal mid-range game that takes the life from the other team. And when you're trying to stay in front of somebody who's fast is one thing, but when you know they can pull up at any point and shoot, it's a whole other thing. He took a career high 19% of his shots from 10 to 16 feet and shot 48% from there. As for a guard, that's pretty great. How'd you feel about that new mid-range development?
It is incredible. It was really interesting to see him develop that, since we all know, and we know about his three-point struggles. The ability to use his speed and start and stop fast is truly insane. Like in those fourth quarters that he would just take over, the key was all of his playground. There was no way to stop it. If you put a big center on him, he's just going to move around him. If you put a guard on him, he's not tall enough to stop a floater or something like that. It's really unstoppable.
Fox is big. He's a big guard. Like he's close to 6'3", and is super physical. He led the league in points per post-up possessions. He didn't post up very much. If there's no qualifiers, that's true. I found that yesterday. I meant to text you, but it was getting pretty late. Double check that for me. He just did. Yeah. It was like 0.7 post-ups per game. Like he's barely doing it, but he just, if the Kings got a possession to a point where Fox has the ability to post up a smaller guy, they're just like, this is great. But honestly, the biggest thing with Fox was his clutch performances last year. This was the greatest clutch season since they kept track of those stats in 1998, I believe.
It was essentially his award to win the second we started talking about and keeping tracks. He just never let go of it. There was, I think, four game winners he hit last year, leading the league, which is insane.
That Orlando Magic one, I almost hurt myself. Who even considers taking a shot from that point? It was like the top of the this thing outside the half court circle, basically. I do want to note that we were up by like five and blew a lead, and then we hit the game winner.
we don't have to talk about that. That's not important. But
Fox took 173 clutch shots. Do you know what percentage he shot on those clutch shots?
It was like a high 50s number, right?
60%.
60. Oh, I was off by
60% and 173 shots. That's insane. I went back and looked at all the stats, and DeMar DeRozan did something similar last season, and that was like a crazy clutch season, or maybe two seasons ago. I forget exactly. But you will never, ever find the 170 shot mark and the 60% mark. I graphed out all the years of all the players, like the top 10 most clutch shots taken. No one's up in that corner. It was just Fox. Do I think there's going to be some regression in that standpoint? Like, yeah. Do I think he has that clutch gene, though, that ability to get to his spots and hit those big time shots? Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember that DeRozan season you sort of alluded to, that was the Bulls' weird revenant season where they were the one seed for a long time. His performances last year are probably not replicable. They're probably not replicable, but we have guys who have shown earlier on in summer league and preseasons like Keegan Murray, who I think are going to give him an opportunity to just keep it out of his hands. His usage percentage last year was about 30%. I can't imagine that it's that high again, because he's got, you know, he's going to be able to rely on someone like Herter, someone like Murray, hopefully someone emerging from the bench, maybe Duarte. I'm seeing a lot of that.
Possibly. I wanted to note that heading into this season, I feel like a lot of us were waiting on Fox to develop his three-point shot. Like, oh, when he gets his three going, like, that'll be it. Like, he'll just dominate. And he shot just 32% from three and 78% last season, which is whatever. But it's like, oh, he actually developed, like, the best mid-range game in the league. Like, okay, like, I didn't know I wanted this. I wasn't aware that this is what I was looking for, but this is exactly where we were. But it's an interesting point of the usage rate thing. Like, do we see a transition into more of a facilitating role from him? Like, what's his game like as a pure passer? Because right now, as it stands, he's more just one of the best scorers in the league. Mm-hmm. Is what's his Halliburton game like? What's his Chris Paul game like? In terms of just pure facilitating, because the pieces are there. It does help when your center is your backup point guard. So we'll see what really happens. But what do you see going forward from Fox? You think this is the best season from him? Like, what's the ceiling? Are we so high that he gets to a different level, or is this about it?
Well, I mean, speaking on that play, the playmaking thing, the one notable jump that I see from him this year, because obviously scoring 24 points a game, when you've got as many offensive options that the Kings do, you know, you're not going to get too much higher than that. But I think his potential to really explode with his assists and his playmaking is there. You saw the gravity that he would attract into the paint whenever he would go for those sort of mid-range floater stuff. I'd imagine that this year he's going to have a lot more opportunities to just kick it out, as opposed to last year when defenses weren't really ready for it and just kind of crashing him.
He's 26 right now, which is still plenty of time. He averaged 15.7 drives per game, which was 11th most in the league. And on those drives, he generated 4.6 field goals per game, which is fourth in the league. So just hyper-efficient driving. That's really his skill set. When you have someone that can crash like that and pull up in these mid-range jumpers, he had just these beautiful kind of stop in the paint, turn around, fading jumpers that are always like, I wish I knew math better, but it's like N plus one, just 1 inch over wherever the defender's hand was. It wasn't consistent. It was just 1 inch above wherever it had to be. That always seemed to find its way. But it was a crazy season watching Fox, because like, as Kings fans, we watched a lot of games where it's like, we're taking a clutch three and it's not even close. And to have them go in, it felt like I was kind of hallucinating.
Right. It was sort of, especially that Magic one that we were talking about earlier, that Magic game winner where he pulled up from basically the logo. That was a shot that, you know, as a Kings fan, you never see guys on your teams taking. You see the Damian Lillards of the world, the Paul Georges, the LeBron Jameses of the world taking these shots. It was so interesting to see a guy on our roster having that level of confidence to take a half-court shot. If he misses that, that's unbelievably embarrassing. He's got the balls to take it. I love it.
Absolutely love it. And the homegrown talent as well. You had to do that in Sacramento. You knew that's how it had to get done. But let's talk about our shooting guard, a new player from not heading into this season, but last season. We traded for Kevin Herter. We gave up a first-round pick. I was flying at the time when the trade went through. I landed, and two things happened. It was the Herter trade and the Rudy Gobert trade. So I was really more focused on the Gobert trade, trying with my jet lag, also trying to comprehend what the Wolves just did. But with the Kings, I'm like, whoa, like that was the first time I really sat there and was like, maybe we actually will be good. Like, this is another piece, another good player. And Herter just exploded for us, was one of the best 3-point shooters in the league. What'd you see from him?
First off, it was a joke for how little we got, or how little we gave away to get Kevin Herter on this roster. It was like
Justin Holiday.
Justin Holiday and a protected first. But Herter has been a real revelation for us, one of the best shooters in the league. And his steady presence on the defensive end is underrated and really appreciated when it comes to De'Aaron Fox, who is sort of a liability back there. He's fast, but he's a liability. Having someone who's taller and can go on the taller shooting guards we've got to face all the time in the Pacific, Clay, I guess now it's going to be Beal and Booker, but Paul George, stuff like that. He handled those assignments well. I mean, there were obviously bad nights, but he did handle it, and providing an incredible shooting clip is the most important thing.
And that he did. That he did. Shot 40% from three, made 205 threes. That was the 16th most in the league. Among the 20 players who made at least 200 threes last season, he was one of just six to maintain a 40%. It's interesting splits of the players to have those numbers, 200 or more and 40% or better. It's like the top three guys, like Steph, Clay, and Buddy Hield, are just all at the top. And then after that, it's a bunch of kind of volume shooters. And then it's Kevin Huerter. And I think Keegan Murray, actually. I think he did that as well.
He's up there.
40% and 200 threes as well. We'll talk about him for sure. But
200 plus, and I'm fairly sure he's over. I know he's over 200 plus because he broke the record.
The Kings were able to generate that crazy three-point production without having just like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, which is really nice to see. Here's the best stat you'll ever hear in your life. Over the last decade, the top five most effective offensive actions in terms of points per possession were Jokic post-ups this past season, Harden isolations in 17, 18, 18, 19, and 19, 20, which is a whole other thing, a whole other conversation we could talk about. But fifth was Kevin Huerter handoff threes this season. He just orbited around Sabonis all year. That's all he did, was just run circles around him, get these crazy handoff threes, and he had the height just to kind of get it and shoot over him. Him and Sabonis ran a 323 handoffs, which is nearly 150 more than the second place pairing of Sabonis and Malik Monk. So the King is a super handoff heavy.
I'm a little worried about what it's going to look like going into next year, because obviously defenses are now going to expect that Huerter dribble handoff. We ran it, I don't know how many times a game, but it must have been 10 plus.
I could do the math right now. Go ahead.
We must have ran it at least 10 plus times a game, it felt like. And I'm a little worried about what defenses are going to do as an adjustment towards it. Hopefully, I think the Kings offense, Mike Brown, is smart enough to counter the counter. But I'm worried that that sort of insane clip that we were getting from DHOs with Sabonis and Huerter and Sabonis and Murray and all those people are going to decline slightly.
With Huerter, he had the handoff ability, and so did Keegan Murray, and we'll talk about that. Can they put the ball on the floor more? Huerter was able to get to like the free throw line and kind of take pull-up jumpers. I kind of liked it. I felt like there was more to that. I didn't feel like it was effective enough to keep spamming those, but someone who just laces threes from wherever, plus the ability to get to the lane, because he shot 60% on two-pointers, which is very, very high. He was really efficient in that mark. But what do you see for him as an isolation score going forward?
He's actually surprisingly, for how good of a three-point shooter he is, not that amazing of a free throw shooter. He only shoots about 72% from the free throw line, which is sort of an interesting stat for a guy who's, you know, automatic from every other place on the court. In terms of an isolation score, I think he was nice in flashes, but I'm not really sure how much he actually needs to do that. There's so many guys who can provide an interior bucket for the Kings. De'Aaron Fox, obviously, but even Malik Monk, Duarte is a really nice finisher inside. Murray showed some improvement. Harrison Barnes is Harrison Barnes. He's big. He's bruising in there. I don't know how much he actually needs to do it.
I just like the idea of him peeling off a screen and defenses have to make that decision. Are we going to close out on him, or can he drive by us? Just a little added layer, just a little bit.
It's a great thing to have in his arsenal. It's great. By far the best year of his career last year, going into his age 24 season. How much do we think he's actually going to improve? Do we think he can improve?
I think so. He's super young. I mean, it's not the age, really. I think people get too caught up in the age and they have to check if the player's actually good. And Huerter made strides and is in a beautiful system. And they talked a lot so far through preseason, through training camp, of, hey, we set the foundation last year. Like, now we like perfect it. We get even better. It's second nature. Like, there is a clip of De'Aaron Fox in preseason driving to the basket and just throwing the ball like kind of blindly behind his head to Harrison Barnes in the corner. And the caption was De'Aaron Fox's vision. But it's not his vision. That's just crazy scheming and planning to know exactly where the other guys are. Where like Fox is driving and he's like, there's someone behind me. There should be someone behind me. We drew this up. We have so many handoff, dribble handoff, fake handoff, post up stuff, that when that becomes second nature, I feel like there could be even a bigger jump for Herter, but it would have to come at like the isolation level if I'm really seeing.
I mean, what you just described there, that is our advantage in the West. Everyone sort of panned the Kings for not really doing much in the offseason, but that right there, what you're describing, the player's innate ability to know his vision, to know that Harrison Barnes is there, to have these sort of intricate planning and intricate offenses. These guys have been playing together for, at this point, most of them for 3 years, 2.5. Yeah. This is going to be a serious advantage for us.
There's another universe where Mark Jackson's our coach. And we just won 34 games. We're like, man, I really hope he can, really hope he can break out.
I wonder if Alvin Gentry will come back. He'll be all right.
I liked Gentry. He was an adult. We knew he wouldn't be the future, but he was a good adult.
Is Kevin Herter's contract a like top 10 contract in the league? Because it's so good. I'm looking at it now. It's 15 this year, 16 next, and 17 the next year. That last contract year, he's aged 27 years old. Having a 27 years old guy who's this good, $17 million, that's pretty incredible.
No, that's pretty great. We should really mention their contracts. Could you read out Fox's contract?
Yeah, Fox's contract is the extension he signed. He's got $32 million this year and for the next 3 years following that.
Okay, pretty solid. Got him locked up.
5 years, 32 a year is the deal, more or less. There's there's inflation.
Kevin Herter took 39 three-pointers against Golden State in the playoffs. How many did he make?
Oh, is this a trivia thing?
Yeah.
Seven.
Ooh, real close. Eight.
Eight, damn.
Eight of 39, 20% from three.
Yeah, that was rough.
I'm mad at Harrison Barnes. I'm mad at Draymond Green. I'm mad at a lot of things, but Kevin Herter was lost come playoff time. A huge reason I want him to develop as an isolation guy to get his own shot by the free throw line, because he's like 6'8", 6'7". He can get shots off over these people, is the pure spot-up shooting goes away in the playoffs. That's the first thing that goes, is the defense gets closer and those shots get harder.
Mm-hmm. This is unfortunately a bit of a trend for Kevin Herter. He has done this before in his two playoff appearances for Atlanta. He shot 34% from three and then 29% from three. His obvious worst being the Kings, right? The largest role. I agree. Him being able to create his own shot and keep defenses honest and keep his okay defensive ability on the court at some capacity for the playoffs. If we can't have him on the court like at all, which is what we found ourselves in last playoffs, it's huge. We can't have one of our best shooters in the court. We've got to rely on Terrence Davis in the playoffs.
Who's out of the league, by the way.
Who's out of the league.
I thought he was pretty good last year. Is he was that bad?
He'll sign abroad.
Okay. He'll be somewhere. Abroad? Like, he was playing minutes for us. He's playing like, okay.
Yeah. Not a good sign.
Not a great sign. Herter has one good playoff series. It was the 2021 conference semis, upsetting the Sixers, 13 points on good efficiency. Had a pretty good one of these games. Let me find it.
Yeah. He proceeded to not be very good at all in the next series.
No, that's okay, though. Yeah. Kevin Herter in game 7 versus the Sixers, 27 points, 7 boards, 3 assists on 10 of 18 shooting. Let's just go find that again. It'll be all right. But you know what? If we're asking, you think Herter's our fifth best player? Sabonis, Fox, like fourth, Murray. Yeah. So it's like, I'm not going to be too harsh on number 5, number 4. Let's move on to Harrison Barnes, our small forward. My write-up for Harrison Barnes went as such. Quote, I am not excited to write about Harrison Barnes. Barnes is Captain Average, Sir Standard, and Major Mundane. Barnes had a PER of 14. This average fat set is 15. Box was minus of -0.8 and a VORP of 0.7. He is the replacement player. On the positive side, Barnes is the second oldest current King and a stable veteran. He is well-liked and a smart player. He plays solid defense against bigger scoring wings and smaller bigs.
He is just fine. He is the vanilla ice cream of the Sacramento Kings. He will not be good. He will not be bad. He will average 14 points a game with, you know, maybe 4 assists and 4 rebounds.
He won't be bad. Are you sure?
I don't think he'll be horrible. He's never horrible.
Yeah, okay.
He's never horrible. He's sometimes bad. He's never horrible. Even in the playoffs, like, obviously, bad look missing that shot, but he was okay. He had his 10 points a game. He had his 3 rebounds, his assist. It's what he always fucking does. I am honestly so sick of having him on the roster. I understand that he's a great veteran and he's awesome, but we could do so much better with a way more dynamic small forward. I am not advocating for him getting kicked off the team. I think he would be an awesome guy to lead the bench unit, but I'm ready for someone else to start between Herder and Murray. Hopefully it's someone like Sasha. I'm a little bit worried about his foot speed and his actual ability to play the three. I don't know if that's possible. Duarte would be really cool if he can keep his 3-point shot consistent as well as maintain his high defense. But I'm ready for Harrison Barnes to take more of a veteran leadership bench role.
He asking someone who's 31 to start going. It's like, all right, man, it's your time, right? And he's like, I'm 31.
Treating him like he's 36.
You know, the thing with vanilla ice cream, though, Jack, is you need it for a sundae. Maybe it's not the most important part. Maybe it's not the most exciting part. But it's the part that's got to be there. He signed an extension over the offseason. After the season, we were kind of in limbo. Kind of stuck, like, are we going to sign Harrison Barnes? Are we going to trade Harrison Barnes? Like, this is obviously the point where we have to improve. But the options out there were pretty bad. It was floated that we were going to give Kyle Kuzma $100 million, and we pretended like that wouldn't have driven me insane.
That would have.
You would find me, like, under the overpasses in downtown Sacramento, just talking to myself.
Fetal position. Shaking and crying.
Shaking and crying. But so yeah. He's $17 million this year, then 18, then 19. It's a good contract. It's pretty solid. He is going to play.
It's an okay contract.
Yeah, it's fine. That's okay. Just what Barnes is. What I do like is in every like Kings video I've ever seen of like the team, and they're like, who pays for the dinners? It's like Harrison Barnes. It's like, who's the best veteran? Harrison Barnes. And he's very well respected, and he has been there and won championships and played in finals and made tons of money. Like that dude is so wealthy. He is like our defensive guy, kind of like at 6'8", like he guards Anthony Davis. He guards Kevin Durant. Like he's going to guard Pascal Siakam or Jason Tatum. Like that's kind of his job. And you need someone like mm-hmm. that.
And he's okay. And you know what? He's just okay at it.
He is just okay at it. When's the last time a player had a crazy game on us? Like, I don't remember watching. Like, was it like a 50 piece against us last season? As bad as our defense was, I really felt like we limited those.
I think I couldn't off the top of my head think of one. Hmm. Yeah. My question on Harrison Barnes, at least the way I'm viewing him, is this. This could be a year that we see him get moved at the deadline, especially this. Isn't by any means a do or die season for the Kings, but if the Kings start off either really, really poor or really, really great, people are going to advocate. They're going to want change at some level. Harrison Barnes is the most logical candidate to go there. Do you trade him for Buddy Hield? Do you trade him for Tim Hardaway? Like, what does his value look like?
I'm not trading for Buddy Hield. Buddy Hield, he's dead to us.
What's your value look like on...
Well, you'd have to get – the thing is we're so wing-deprived is you'd have to get someone of similar stature back. Man, I couldn't see it. I just can't see that trade happening. Although I like what you said about if we're really good as well. Because you think about, well, as Kings fans, we're used to being really bad and demanding for change. But if you're really good, you also – it's like, whoa, like maybe let's take a crack at this now. Like let's try to get better. Barnes is so important to the culture right now. I feel like – next season, like when he's an expiring deal, that's when we're going to be looking to move him, or he's a 2-year contract or something. But I just can't see us.
He's just not going to have value by that point, though.
He's going to be 32. I promise you, he's been as good as he's always been his entire career. He's been the same. I don't think he's going anywhere. I can picture Barnes playing to like 38 at this pace.
And just continually averaging 13 to 14 points a game.
Yeah, I could see that.
There was all those talks about turning him and picks into OG Anunoby. Just teased me for months. It's never going to fucking happen.
You wanted that?
I would love that.
Yeah,
but
I couldn't get in it.
Are you telling me you wouldn't like that?
I would like it, but what's the price for OG Anunoby? 6 picks, our entire future. He's not that good.
It's ridiculous. He's not.
He's a top 60-ish player in the NBA at the moment. 70-ish.
Great defender, like, though.
Yeah, but that's like sticking a Band-Aid on a sinking ship and being like, our defense is better. Like,
it's much better.
Yeah, it'd be better.
Matisse Thybulle.
There you go. Yeah, we were gonna trade for him too, huh?
I kind of liked him.
Okay.
Kind of like that idea.
Power forward, the Messiah, our saving grace, best thing to happen in Sacramento ever, Keegan Murray. Now, I want to go back first to the draft, to the Jaden Ivey.
Oh, good. I'm so glad that we're going to do this.
What were your thoughts at the time? Because for me, I was really stuck on, like, we just have to take the better prospect. Like, if we're taking fit right now, basically, we aren't good enough to take fit. Hmm. We have to take talent. And I, at this point, a Jaden Ivey doesn't look that good.
No, he doesn't. I was also really torn about that pick. To the point where it seemed like every single day I was like, okay, we should take Ivy because he was really great in college. We should take Murray. He's the perfect fit. And it basically went back and forth every day to the point that when I watched the draft live and they said Keegan Murray, I was just like, oh, okay. All right, well, we're just going to do Keegan, I guess. And people gave the Kings so much crap for taking Keegan. And let's be real, we were going to get stick either way. If we drafted Jaden Ivey, we would have gotten the same level of ridicule because they'd been like, oh, you just drafted Davion Mitchell and De'Aaron Fox. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You just traded Haliburton. What are you doing? It was the perfect pick. It was always the perfect pick. There's no doubt in my mind I'd never go back a million years and take Jaden Ivey. I don't think Jaden Ivey's all that.
He hasn't been great. And rookie point guards are tough, and it's a bad situation in Detroit, but he hasn't shown the best flashes. But it's almost like one of those, I don't know how to describe this. It's like those, like, the hanging metal pieces that you see in art museums that if you look at it from a certain angle, like, it's an eagle, and you're like, I get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you're just looking straight on, it's like it's just pieces of junk. That's the Murray pick where you kind of turn. You're like, he's 6'8", and he shoots 40% from three. Duh. Like, we should have done that the whole time. Perfect fit. Moved off ball. Just a turret on offense. I don't see how Ivy would have fit into that.
It's so ironic with the Ivy thing, right? There was so much crap given to the Kings. It's like, oh, if you take Ivy, it's your third point guard in a row. And Detroit took him like 2 years after taking Killian Hayes and Cade. They did the same fucking thing, and they were geniuses.
That's a good point. That's a great point. The people hate Sacramento. They do. They do, because you're totally right. It was a lose-lose because it was seen as the three-person draft. We weren't going to get Paulo. We weren't going to get Chet. We're going to get Jabari Smith, who doesn't look very good. I'd be interested in Jabari Smith still.
I'd be interested. I'm not ready to throw in the towel on Jabari Smith at all.
I'm not, but I mean, if you had to redraft it, are you taking him or Keegan?
I don't think the Rockets take Keegan.
Yeah.
If it gets redrafted, right?
Yeah.
So we'd have to take Jabari.
But you'd probably still take it. Yeah. And I saw him live and I saw the flashes. Like, he is like kind of Chet and kind of like the Wemby thing where he's like legitimately 7 feet tall and can just pull up over anybody.
I understand the Jabari Smith hype. Totally. He looks, the idea of Jabari Smith is dope.
We're getting there. Maybe this is the season, but for Keegan Murray,
still in Brooks season, actually.
Yeah, whether you like it or not. No. Keegan was 15th in the entire NBA in threes made, a deadly 6'8 turret and a fluid off-ball mover with imposing size. Now, going forward, we want the same thing that I wanted from Kevin Huerter, which is get the ball. If it's not there, that shot, it's not the end of the world. Put the ball on the ground and go for it. And I'm telling you, man, in the summer league, in preseason, he's shown that. He's shown that that's what they're trying to do with the direction they're trying to go. He had like 41 points in a preseason game, and they're like, all right, you're too good for this. And they shut him down.
I knew that they were going to give him the summer league reps in the first California Classic in Sacramento, and I was like, I've got to be there. I've got to see what entirely Keegan-fed offense, a heliocentric Keegan Murray offense looked like, and it was beautiful. It was 41 points against the Heat. His confidence was insane. He's driving to the rim. He showed this in preseason games. If we can see this Keegan, but, you know, finding his role next to Sabonis, but with the same aggression he's been showing earlier on, it's going to be a scary season for Keegan.
He's not the athlete that a lot of the super slow developing, slow burn, all-star wings, all-NBA wings like Kawhi or Paul George turn into. So I don't think that's going to happen, but he just is so like unrattleable almost. Like he'll have bad games, but he'll be out there the whole time.
And also there's really nothing in his game that requires insane athleticism. Like what is he doing that really is like, oh, thank, if he was a physical freak, he would have made that. He never has moments like that.
When you can shoot like he can, it just opens up the rest of the floor so, so much. And I think he'll be able to drive more. He just, watching him last season, when the moments were bad, he'd put the ball on the floor and get stuck immediately. And you're like, oh man, like he really needs to develop that ability, or it'd be like the lane would be wide open and an NBA veteran sees that one dribble, boom, and they're gone, like straight towards the basket, where you could tell he was like, I'm not doing that yet. Like we're not there. Like I'm thinking about it, but I'm not really into it. An older sophomore for sure, but who cares?
Like you were saying earlier, like you're getting too caught up. People get too caught up in the age thing that he's an older rookie. He's 23. He's 23 and he just shot 41% from three as a rookie and broke every conceivable rookie 3-point record in the NBA. He's going to be fine.
I'm looking at Cam Johnson's stats because he was 23 as a rookie. Came in. Cam Johnson is almost 27. He's going to be 28 at some point during this season. I know, like I always said that Cam Johnson should have gone early in the draft because just draft the good player, dude. Who cares how old they are? But I am still shocked that he's as old as he is. Cam Johnson's rookie season was 9 points and three boards, 39% shooting from three, total of 106 made threes, and pretty similar players, I could argue. Do you see that comparison?
I see the comparison. Cam Johnson is a little bit more athletic mm-hmm. Than Keegan and is better in terms of like stealing the ball on the perimeter. He's a little bit better of a defender, but it's a similar comparison. It's fair. I think that Keegan's got maybe a little bit more of a ceiling.
I'd like to think so.
Cam does. I like to think so. I think he's a better shooter for sure.
He's a better shooter. His frame is better, in my opinion. Like maybe he's not the athlete, but I just watched him. He kind of got bullied in the post a little bit. Like he is big, but he's not super strong. And I think I could picture like 25-year-old Keegan Murray being like more athletic, stronger, kind of an inside out game where he can hit those threes, like kind of how Klay Thompson plays in a way, where if Thompson gets like down towards the block, he's still really dangerous, even though he's like the best shooter at that position.
Right, because he's surprisingly big dude.
For sure. Yeah, now when I first saw him, like whoa, like he's not like a 6'6", 6'8", he's like a 6'10", 6'8". You know what I right. mean?
I actually, originally, before I ever saw him play an NBA minute, I expected him to be a 3. Mm-hmm. Because that's sort of what he did in college, and I was a little worried when I saw him running the four, but he can do it, he can handle it. It gets a little scary when it comes to some of these bigger teams that are going to run these massive guys at the four, most notably the Phoenix. If they're going to run Durant at the four, which appears to be the plan, that seems like a difficult assignment. LeBron at the four, although Harrison Barnes will probably handle that. He's going to have some hard matchups this season at the four.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Phoenix. Can you imagine those guys guarding Sabonis? Like, can you imagine those guys chasing Herder and Fox and Keegan around the three-point line and diving at the basket?
They're not going too old, too tired. They're just not going to. They're going to play zone, and then they're going to score 140 points.
Don't have to say, like, don't want to hurt my feelings like that. Let's move on to our glorious center, Domantas Sabonis. Just like we did in the draft, let's go back to the Halliburton trade. I made it clear before that I was very upset when that happened. Obviously, I justified it, and I wasn't going to give up, but I had wanted to build around Halliburton, go tank and get Zion in that draft. Or was it Zion? There was somebody. There would have been Wembanyama this year.
It would have been... oh my God, really? We're casuals. It would have been Paolo.
Paolo.
and Chet, yeah, and Chet, obviously.
And Chet. We were almost there. We split the difference.
Yeah, more or less.
We didn't do that. We didn't trade at Fox for like a bunch of... I wanted those Knicks picks. I'll be honest, man. Mm. Like New York Ooh. And Knicks first rounders should be gold. That could be anything. Like, who knows the Knicks?
It could be anything. It could range from 20 to 2.
It could. We went the other way.
What was that trade package, though?
I don't know. It was, like, RJ Barrett and Toppin and, like, three first, basically.
I just hate RJ Barrett. I'm so out on RJ.
I don't think that would have been a good call in hindsight, but I just didn't feel like I feel like Haliburton was so special, you kind of had to retool everything and kind of go that direction, which he still is, which the Pacers are still in a good spot. That offseason was the longest offseason ever, because when Sabonis got here and we play, like, we showed flashes and it was like pretty cool and we won the first game, and I'm like, oh man, like Sabonis is really special. And then the season ended and we're like, just got to wait this out. All offseason defending the trade, defending Sabonis, like hoping to make the playoffs, everyone's projecting us to win like 32 games. Was it just as long for you?
It was just as long for me. It was just constant abuse about the Domantas Sabonis trade, even to the point of like people picking us, like you were saying, all the way at like 12th for the next season. Domantas Sabonis was always, he's such a target for everyone. Whenever there's something bad, it's always Sabonis. I don't know what it is about him that people love to really get into, but he's just, he doesn't really seem to be the most loved player outside of Sacramento. I don't really get why.
He is such an easy target, and they, other teams beat the shit out of him all game
two. They beat the shit out of him. I don't know another player in the NBA that gets the crap beaten out of him every single game, like Domantas Sabonis. Like, it seems like every game, like, oh, he got a black eye again. Oh, his lip is cut and he's bleeding on the court. Like, it's every time with him. Dude takes so much abuse. Please enlighten me.
You know what it is? It's the rebounding. It's that he's just a ferocious rebounder. And other guys aren't getting hit like that because they're not going for the basketball. He led the league in rebounds. He was one of, I believe, the top five players in box outs per game. He owned the glass. And I know Kevon Looney ate him up in the playoffs, and that happened. I think a huge part of that is, like, you go play a 7-game playoff series against Kevon Looney and Draymond Green with bruised ribs and a broken hand. Tell me how you feel down there. I think that really hampered his physicality.
And he was not getting any support from his backup centers in that playoff run against Looney. He was basically just 40 minutes a game taking on just constant abuse. Alex Len was okay in the few minutes that he played, but he just couldn't play very much. And I'm very happy that we've at least tried to rectify that by signing someone like JaVale McGee, because I think that his ability to withstand that is going to be the end all for him. Because once he was gassed by like game four, he was done. He couldn't do anything.
Absolutely. He got beat up. Some other Sabonis stats. The 8th most assists per game by a center ever, led the league in screen assists, and shot a career high 62%. He was like the center of the universe for the best offensive rating of all time. His ability to not just facilitate, but score himself. He could take anyone off the dribble, and just, it felt like he was always just a step behind where I thought he should be, but then he made it anyways, where it's like, oh, that's an ugly layup. Oh, it went in. And it's like, oh man, that's a tough hook shot. Oh, but it went in. He was really effective down there. His vision, his passing, it lit the NBA on fire. He was 7th in MVP voting and an All-NBA player.
He was absolutely unbelievable. There are some things I would love to see him improve, though. For one, I think he could really ease up on the fouls. He led the NBA in personal fouls all of last year and was really apparent.
Really? I missed that.
He did. Okay. He led the NBA in personal fouls, which I didn't realize until somewhat recently when I was researching this, but he didn't just lead it, he led it by a lot. Draymond Green had 229 personal fouls to end the year. Domantas Sabonis had 280.
Wow. If anyone can fix that, I feel like Mike Brown has a plan. I did feel like the refs were always out to get him. And I'm definitely not being a homer here. This is a logical, level-headed take.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the refs being him just not getting a good whistle is because of how he plays. And he's not like the most finessey big. It doesn't look pretty when he's getting rebounds and when he's trying to desperately put the ball back in the basket, because he doesn't really have the most interesting offensive bag down low. So he's just kind of flinging his limbs everywhere, and it goes in. It's really effective, but he's just using his size and his strength. I think that's why he gets a lot of crappy whistles. It just doesn't look as good.
When you're a post-up center that's not great at defending the rim, you're going to commit a lot of fouls, because the posting up leads to, let's say, one offensive foul per game. And he's not great defending the rim, so he's out of position. That's an extra 2. So we're starting at 3, and then we can play basketball, basically. Going forward, it's interesting because Sabonis lifted our ceiling from not a playoff team to a 3 seed. But at the same time, is the reason our ceiling is capped at where it is, because his inability to defend the rim and his inability to space the floor. Now, I will mention, in the playoffs versus the Warriors, he was fine defensively. I expected them to pick and roll him to death, to drag him out with Steph and just destroy him. He was honestly much better than I anticipated. That was really nice to see. But in exchange, he didn't take a shot outside of where his hand ended. Like, if his hand didn't connect to the rim, he didn't take that shot. What are you seeing going forward?
A lot of people are being very quick to dismiss him as the ceiling here. I am a little bit curious about what Sabonis looks like as the second big man on the court. I know that sounds a little bit strange, but that's sort of how he played in Indiana, and it really helped hide his defensive inability by having someone like Miles Turner there. And if we want to slide Murray to the three and just fully flip the small ball trend that's just taken over the NBA, I'm curious to see what that looks like. We haven't seen a lot of two big man sets with Sabonis.
Now, the thing is, though, with the Pacers, they had Miles Turner to space the floor because he could shoot threes. Who's doing that for us? We need a stretch big. I had such a great bit on one of the preview pods last year where I just imagined Monty McNair at his whiteboard being like, okay, we need a stretch big, a stretch center, like crossing off names, like, okay, like this person, and just getting down to Miles Turner and being like, God damn it. Like, fuck. Like, I just recreating Indiana and like, oh man, like a Buddy Hield would be a great 3-point shooter around him.
Man,
and like
Bruce Brown would look great.
If our jerseys were more like yellow, and like he's just slowly rebuilding the Pacers. I just don't see a too big set working with, unless we're just completely sacrificing our spacing. If Fox was Steph Curry, then you could play anybody.
I guess it's dependent on a leap in terms of outside shooting that comes from Fox.
You could do Herter, Keegan, and like a sharp shooting Fox, but that's a big F.
It's a reach. It's sort of the best case scenario with Sabonis, though. It's really hard to have a center who can't defend. It's super difficult. And moving him over to the four fixes that, but at the expense of having to have a really good stretch five.
I gotta say, though, his contract's pretty good for the caliber player he is.
It's very good.
41 million, then 44, 48, then 51. That would be age 7, 8, 9, 10. So 30, age 31, and we'll see from there.
Yeah. The psychotic thing to do is to run Sasha or Keegan Murray at the small five and let Sabonis play the four. That's the insane thing to do.
Okay, but what's the difference at that point? Like,
there's not any.
There's not any. Like, I am interested to see, like, I mean, with Fox, Herter, Barnes, we could Fox, Herter, Murray, Sasha, Sabonis, and then it's like, because Sasha's a better shooter than Barnes.
Yeah,
much better. Yeah, you could just do that.
Right. Or if Alex Len is going to shoot the lights out, then hey, we've got a stretch five on the roster already.
we'll talk about that. I have a great question for you.
Please.
With Sabonis, I just have a stat for you. He was the first player, this was December 21st and this happened. He was the first player with 75 rebounds and 30 assists over a four-game span since Wes Unseld in 1970. The only other players to accomplish that feat are Elgin Baylor, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell, and another Kings legend, Maurice Stokes. He was just he was on the cutting edge of this new breed of center, these like passing maestros that could orchestrate these offenses and push the pace. I think that's the biggest thing, is guys like him and guys like Jokic. While Jokic is in a different galaxy, it's still kind of the same kind of basketball.
Right. It's the same stereo, the same archetype.
Sure. It's like it's like the Try Guys videos where it's like a dollar burger versus a $30 burger. and that's what Sabonis is for us. Yeah. But his ability to get rebounds and then push the pace was incredible, and find like Herter, and the way he would like push the pace down to the other free throw line, stop, pivot, and find someone cutting, and like someone would cut by him, and someone would curl around at the same time, and he had these two options, and the defense is like ripping apart at the molecular level, trying to be in two places at once.
Speaking of Jokic, that's the other thing. The Kings and the Nuggets, there's a lot of similarities between the two rosters, especially before, like maybe not currently, but the 2 years ago Nuggets. there's an argument, there's a camp of people that want to see Sabonis take on the Jokic role, where it's just him as the center of the offense and everything runs around and through Sabonis. I'm skeptical about what that looks like, but I think that the roster construction is similar enough that maybe it's feasible.
The difference between Jokic and Giannis, Jokic and
Sabonis. It was the shooting, for one.
It's the scoring ability. The spacing, like, Jokic isn't the greatest shooter in the world, but he takes them and he makes them at a good enough rate where you have to pay attention to him. The other thing is he is the most effective post-up player we have seen since Shaq, right? Like, you have to stay in front of him. He just generates offense from down there. Sabonis has, let's say, the passing ability is very similar. It's the scoring ability. It's that every time Jokic touches the ball, the other defense freaks out. It doubles him, triples him, sends all five guys at him, where Sabonis doesn't really have that kind of attention. So it isn't as dangerous.
He really needs to calm down on the fouls. I'm looking at his numbers against his previous years and against the rest of the NBA. It's jarring how many it was. The next guy after him at 280 was at like 250.
Man, that's just so many fouls. I actually didn't realize that. Fouls is such a weird stat. The NBA doesn't really keep track of that very well.
No, they don't.
Like, if I looked at like the personal fouls per game, like, isn't really like a part of Basketball Reference. Like, it's just not really there.
Per game? I'm looking at personal fouls just in total.
Even that.
Yeah.
According to Basketball Reference, Sabonis' Hall of Fame probability is 3.9%.
Ooh, interesting conversation. The Sabonis Hall of Fame conversation. He probably needs a couple. He needs a little bit more, probably.
Oh, sure. Was he in my top 50 centers? I think he was in there.
All time?
Mm-hmm.
I guess, what, three-time All-Star, one-time All-NBA? Yeah. He's probably got at least one or two more of those in him.
He's 48th as it stands.
Okay. Who's above and who's below?
Joakim Noah is below, and Jermaine O'Neal is above.
Ooh, Joakim Noah is below. Interesting.
Joakim Noah played like 1.5 years.
I know.
It was a special one and a half year. It's honestly interesting because it's kind of similar in a way where Noah dragged the worst offense in the league to the playoffs. And then when it was like actually time to play a playoff series, it kind of flamed out because it was more of like a kind of a novelty gig. And Sabonis dragged the worst defense in the league to the playoffs. Then come playoff time, it kind of wore out. So it's similar in that way. But some other guys around him, Al Horford, Bill Laimbeer, Rudy Gobert. I don't know if I updated that one. I think Gobert is actually quite a bit higher. DeMarcus Cousins comes in at 39.
Ah.
Too high.
Well.
Too high.
Too high. Too high.
I'll fix 400, that. Maybe. I'll fix that. Let's talk about the bench.
Let's talk about it. Get
through it quicker. Now, we'll get to Malik Monk. I have to ask this question. Now, we talked about this.
Are we doing the Davion thing?
No, Alex Len.
Okay.
Because our biggest thing was backup center.
Right.
That was our issue. We were doing this Metu, Holmes, Nemus, Keita thing. None of those guys stuck. Holmes and Keita were completely unplayable. Metu was out there, I'll say. Alex Len looks to have the backup center position kind of locked up. If anything, JaVale McGee is 35 with asthma. He's not going to be playing. Like, you know, his minutes aren't going to be very big.
He's going to get 15 minutes a game.
Let's say 12.
He's not going to get a lot.
We talked about this. Len in 2019 made 74 threes at 36%. My question to you is, how many threes did Chimezie Metu make last year?
Not a single fucking one.
No.
Right?
No.
He shot some?
Okay. I feel like I'm having an aneurysm. He made 9 threes last year. I think I watched all of those.
He made 9 last year. I don't think I saw a single one.
Because in my head, he shot threes.
In my head, he was a lob threat, and that's it.
He could space the floor, and that's why I liked him. I was like, no, like, he kind of spaces the floor. Last year, he took 38 threes. I think I watched those games specifically, and I missed all the games where he didn't take threes. I could have sworn he took, like, one a game, like, one or two a game.
No way, yeah.
He didn't. I guess he kind of did. He took,
well, I mean, how many?
66 games, 38 threes.
Okay.
I, like, in my head, I'm like, yeah, he made like 50. Like him and Alex Len, equally good shooters. He can't shoot the ball at all. not even a little bit, not even in his wildest dreams. He shot 24% from three last year, which is just not three-point shooting. That's like you take it sometimes for fun. Are you even more in on Alex Len with this information? Because I kind of was. I'm like, oh, hey, like maybe the spacing I thought Metu was bringing never existed. Just never was.
And maybe Alex Len can do it.
Maybe Alex Len can do it.
He's like, he's back to what you were saying about the, you know, the I can't forget the analogy. I can't remember the analogy you used with Jokic and then Sabonis.
Oh, the try guys.
Alex Len is, yeah, exactly. Alex Len is like the Kmart version of Jonas Valanciunas, where he's just massive and can weirdly shoot a three. I don't think he's going to do it too much, but I also think it's a pretty big advocation on Mike Brown's behalf for Alex Len to be like, you know what? Nerlens Noel, established defensive NBA player? Nah. Nick Cata, who's a guy that the organization clearly believes has some promise? Nah, we got Alex Len.
Yeah.
Like, they clearly believe in the guy. His presence as just this enormous dude, he's listed at 7 foot, 250. If you were to come up to me and tell me he was actually 7'3 and 386 pounds, I would have bought it. There is no one who looks bigger on an NBA. He makes everyone else look like a child.
Yeah. He was a high draft pick in 2013. He's 30
fifth
now.
Fifth overall pick.
Yeah, 30 now. That was to the
Suns?
Those it was the Len and the Dragon Bender picks set the Suns back a lifetime.
Yeah. Olsiki Len or Olisiki Len is his real name. I don't know how to pronounce it. No. I think he'll be okay. I made a video about how him and JaVale are like this kind of fun little yin and yang backup center duo where JaVale can catch lobs and Len can get rebounds. And they kind of do the things that each other can't do, which is kind of fun. But they're both, you can't play either of them more than 15 minutes a game because JaVale is old and Alex is so slow. And he doesn't fit with the Kings' fast offense.
He is so slow, but like, picture 12 minutes a game of, like
yeah,
you said,
that's great.
The biggest guy in the NBA, just this massive person. That's such a huge part of rim protection. It's just like, there's a fucking huge guy in front of me. Like, maybe not.
So, JaVale is probably a better rim protector.
In
probably.
Spurts, yeah, in spurts.
Obviously, he can't play very much, but Alex Len's vertical is so big you could maybe slide a credit card underneath it. JaVale McGee
not
at least
textured
has
ones,
some
ones, though, right? Not like the kind of bolded.
No, I'm talking like one of the metal ones. Okay. Like, let's not get crazy here. I think that his offense is not going to be what's going to keep him on this court. He's huge. He's a great rebounder because he can just be a big pole. And I saw one play in the preseason where him and Sasha did a pick and roll, and that was really fun because what are you going to do against a 7 foot guy and a 6'10 guy doing a pick and roll? And what are you doing against that? Especially when one of the guys is a career 44% three-point shooter. Last year in super, super limited minutes, he averaged 1.7 points a game with 2.3 rebounds and 1.5 assists. Now, granted, that is over 6.2 total minutes of play. So nothing, really. He didn't play at all until like the last 2 months of the year when Mike Brown realized, oh, shit, we actually might be able to use this guy in the playoffs.
Alex Len, offensive Raptor, -3.5. Defensive Raptor, +0.7. That's what we're looking for. He's a good defensive center. I think the Kings have enough offensive weapons to supplement his, like him having the worst hands and no post moves and no ability to score and no lob threat ability. If he can just kind of keep the defensive flow for a bit. But I wanted to talk about JaVale McGee because when we first signed JaVale, I'm like, that's one, I don't think he's making it to the final roster. He's 35. This is like kind of a fun novelty thing. My reasoning was the Mavs needed a center so bad last year and they couldn't, like, they didn't play him. They didn't go to JaVale. But I actually think that Jason Kidd is a fucking moron and playing with Lucas sucks.
I think that's the hidden attribute to the JaVale thing is that Jason Kidd sucks.
At 35, he averaged, he's 35 now, but not last season, but the season prior. Averaged 9 points and 7 boards, 63% shooting, 15 minutes per game, over 74 games for the 64-win Suns. That sounds like exactly what we're looking from him. Probably even less than that. Maybe closer to, like I said, 12 minutes per game. The lob threat, the rim running, the rim protection, I think it's there. I'm kind of all in. I thought he was done, but I think I actually am back in.
I was a little bit worried that he was done, but he's had a couple really nice plays in the preseason. There was one pick and roll with Malik Monk that he pulled off. Having a guy that actually rolls and hits alley-oops like that is really fun. We haven't had that aspect in our offense in a while. I mean, I guess Chimezie Metu sort of provided that, but JaVale McGee is clearly a lot better at it than he is. Also, the underrated bit about having JaVale, I don't know how much stock you put in it, but he's a guy who's seen a lot of fucking playoff games. He has played, and to at this point in his career, 74 playoff games. He's won 3 rings. Having a guy like that in a locker room is useful.
Now, I have a big question, and this is something I should have asked you before the podcast started. What is, like, I follow the NBA, like I'm kind of into it, obviously. What's the final roster size?
15.
Is it 15? Because we're at 18.
And then there's one, I thought it was 14. It's technically 15, but it's 14 1-2-way. Is that right?
Okay. I'm looking at 18 guys, and I knew we're cutting them down. So we should talk about that, the final roster spots, because we're mentioning JaVale, still not set in stone that he's making the final roster. I think he should, right? We both think he should.
They just cut Burton and Comanche.
Yeah, they just cut some other guys. So those guys are gone.
Lamb is gone.
Yeah, I'm not seeing him.
Okay, wait, now I'm going to look at this. Lamb, Comanche, Burton are gone. I don't know what the fuck we were ever doing signing Deontay Burton. Like, what was that about? They're like, hey, like, let's see if this 29-year-old guy who's never been good can crack the roster. It's like, what are we doing? Not that big of a deal. He got cut in a week, but still, he took media day pictures. What the fuck? He's going to be in there for the rest of my life. It's just Deontay Burton.
That's funny.
Jordan Ford is still on the roster, as is Jalen Noel, Keon Ellis, Colby Jones, Slauson.
I'm seeing those guys. So we have of McGee, Ford, Noel, Ellis, and Slauson, which is 5 people. Only 2 can remain.
Yeah, maximum of 15, 13 active.
Interesting. Okay, well let's talk about that. I don't think Noel's making it. I didn't have anything written down about him because I assume that he.
I think he's interesting, but we have so many similar players to him. Kind of don't see him getting a spot. I think Jalen Slauson is interesting. I think he goes to the G. I don't think we cut him. I think he plays for Stockton.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to be Ford and Noel that go to the Stockton Kings.
So we've got to cut 3 of these guys?
I think.
That's 18 right there. How do you feel about Keon Ellis?
I fucking love Keon Ellis. I want him to play so badly. He's like 6'6". He's super streaky. He's a great defender. Fantastic defender. And you could just say that. I saw a clip of Amen Thompson. I really think it's Amen. The Pistons one.
Yeah. Amen. Oh, wait. Amen is the Pistons one. Also,
him just playing out of your mind, super hyper athletic defense in preseason. I sent it to my brother and I said, have you ever seen a Kings player play defense like this ever? And he said, no, I never have in my life. And I just want that so badly. He hit 3 straight threes in a game yesterday. It's the 16th today. I'm not sure when this will come out, but the 15th, he hit 3 straight threes in preseason. He's a tall, lanky defender. I want it so badly. I really hope he makes the rosters. I think if I had to pick, it's McGee and Ellis. And Ford, Noel, and Slauson are probably going to be out or in the G League.
I really like the idea of Jordan Ford, right? Local guy. He's been here his whole life.
Yeah, he went to high school right by me.
Yeah, Folsom, right? Yeah,
it's like 30. It's like 20 minutes from here.
Mm. Having a third point guard is really important. And that's sort of what Ford is. I kind of can't imagine us going into the season with only 2, right?
I'll tell you our point guards. Fox, Sabonis, Monk, okay, Herter.
There it is.
Then it's Davion. We have
you
one.
You want Herter handling the ball?
Him and Monk on the court at the same time is enough ball handling where it functions. I think Monk is kind of, he's our backup shooting guard, but he's our backup ball handler.
Keon Ellis can actually handle the ball a little
That's
bit
That's what
well,
I'm saying. I'm all in.
I'm a fan of keeping Keon on this roster. I think Slauson is probably not there. I think he's he probably needs a year or so in the G. I'm not saying I'm out. I still like a lot of things from him.
I do like how the G League is just fully caught on. I know it's been a long time, but when they change from the D League to the G League, I'm like, the fuck is that? What are we doing? And you know what? You know what? It's the G League now. Like, I thought it never would stick, but here we are. It's the fucking Gatorade League.
Well, don't call it that. It's just the G. It's the G. He's going to the G.
He's going to the G. It was a developmental league. Like, it had a...
Yeah. It had, like, an actual name instead of a sponsorship.
Okay, so we're into Len and McGee. We, obviously, let's touch on Malik Monk. Fifth in the sixth man of the year voting last year, which is criminally low. I don't know what people are thinking. He was first in...
Who was he behind? Portis Quickly.
Norm Powell.
Powell.
Is...
Brogdon.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Brogdon's not going to win it again. Powell's done. Quickly's going to start. Portis is Portis.
There you go. 13.5 points per game, which was not his career high. And his efficiency actually took quite a bit of a step back from last season on the Lakers. But what made him so special on the Lakers, he was just kind of a heat check scorer. And he got his, which he still was for us, but a career high 3.9 assists per game. That's the step he took. In terms of ball handling, in terms of facilitating, being basically our backup point guard. I also would like to note he was 12th in free throw percentage, like a true 90% free throw shooter. And I felt that was so important. When you're a young team trying to win close games, free throws can rattle you. And having Monk just knock him down every time was awesome. Just such a relief.
It was. The assist thing is huge, especially in the fact that he didn't take... a massive leap in turnovers, which you might expect for someone who's trying to play make more often. He didn't at all. I mean, it took a tiny little hit, but nothing massive. I think the idea of having a leader, like, I think Malik is going to stay as much as you might want him starting. Having him be the main guy, the number one on the second unit is so nice because he's capable. The trouble is when he gets cold, he's entirely unplayable.
When he got cold kind of earlier in the season, I was all in on Keon. That was my Keon Ellis peak. I'm like, Malik Monk should not be fucking playing. He cannot guard anybody, and he is an iceberg. But he did really figure it out. I wanted to read some things because I mentioned the free throw shooting. I'm going to read some stats that show why I was so infatuated with that. The first game of the season, we lost by 7. We shot 13 of 19 from 3. The second game of the season, we lost by 2. And we shot 15 of 26 from the free throw line. Sorry, I said from 3 the first time, didn't I? I meant the free throw line. I'm going to say that again. We lost by 2 points and shot 15 of 26 from the free throw line in that second game.
That's absurd.
That's absurd. I'm going to go to the next game. Against the Warriors, we lost by 5. We fell to 0-3. And the Kings shot 20 of 25. Lost by 5, missed 5 free throws. The next game, we lost by 15, got hammered by the Grizzlies. This was the darkest point of my life. 18 of 22 shooting. Not bad. 82% is fine. But we had those games where the free throw shooting was just rough. Where were we league-wide in terms of threes made? Can I find that real quick?
By the fourth game in the season or at the end of the year?
At the end of the year. Per game stats. We were 12th. We were 12th. 79%. But as a 3 seed to be 12th in free throw shooting, you kind of felt that as one of our weaknesses.
Yeah, you did. You did. There's not a lot you can do about... I don't really know how you develop a team-wide free throw shooting. It's a difficult thing to do. And it wasn't helped by the fact that Kevin Huerter's sort of a shoddy free throw shooter. Mm-hmm. And he shot a lot of them last year.
He shot a career high. I mean, it was still like 2 per game. But how's Sasha's free throw shooting?
Sasha's fine. Sasha's problems are not on the shooting end of the basketball. If there's anything that this guy can do, it's shoot the ball. I'm not worried about his free throws. I'm not worried about his 3 even a little bit. I know people are like, maybe it won't translate. When it comes to EuroLeague guys that come over from the NBA, or they come over from EuroLeague to the NBA, or from wherever in Europe to the NBA, the problems that they have are basically never with the shot. There's guys like Nico Mirotic I could point out. There's more I could think of that I'm just not for some reason. That's not going to be his problem. His problem is that he's not very athletic.
No, he's slow.
Like, at all. Slow-footed. He's super slow. His lateral quickness is garbage.
Do you want to touch on our Vezenkov point right now? You want to go all in?
I'm willing to.
Keep going.
I am scared about his athleticism. I didn't expect him to be quite such a statue in his first couple preseason games. And maybe that's just because he's getting used to the speed of the NBA and it'll pick up at some point, which, you know, that'll probably happen at some level. He is not going to be able to play at all down the stretch if that's what he looks like on the court.
That's tough.
Because he's going to get hunted, right? You can't start a guy who's moving that slowly. Same reason why Alex Len wasn't getting a lot of run when it was really, really important for us. Having his shot in the lineup is key, but he's going to be a target the second we're on defense, and we don't really need more of those.
Can we do Vezenkov-Len lineups for the statue brothers?
Oh, God. I mean, the two of them have chemistry. Weirdly.
That's good.
They've shown that.
I've always really hoped for Vezenkov to have, like, Luka athleticism in a way.
Oh, I
where
hear
like
you. Okay.
Luka's like, you look at him and you're like, Luka's really slow and he kind of can't stand for anyone. But offensively, I mean, just the shiftiness. Like when Vezenkov came off a screen in preseason, he came down from the left corner around Sabonis, got a handoff. And the only fast part about it was the step back. He got the ball and then he exploded. It was like half
the second he has the ball, he's really quick. His release is. There are two guys that I think have that quick of a release, and it's Sasha and it's Klay Thompson. He's got that same sort of unbelievable shot speed. He needs just a foot of space, and he'll be able to get his shot. The problem is you put a fast-ish wing on him. You put, I don't know, Herb Jones. You put, who's a guy in L.A., Torian Prince. He's not going to get that step. Rui Hachimura. I'm thinking guys are going to have to play a lot. No one on the Suns, but even someone like... actually, there's no one on the Clippers who I could think of who's quicker.
Well, you know, Paul George. Yeah. I just like to think that Vezenkov has the size to handle those kind of faster guys. Like, he's just a lot bigger than someone like Herb Jones. But that's what I was really looking for is, like, he kind of lumbers. And then as soon as he touches the ball, it's like 1-2. And he's there. But that defensive aspect scares me because we don't have much room for bad defensive players in our rotation as a team that finished 25th on defense last year.
We don't at all. I've watched a lot of his European highlights. And one thing that he hasn't shown off yet in the NBA, or at least not as much as I'd like him to, that he did back there, is he was really good at moving off the ball. He wasn't just like standing in the corner. Maybe that's what Mike Brown is initially telling him to do. But if you watch his EuroLeague highlights, when he's not shooting, he's making all these backdoor cuts. He's just doing the Curry like sprint around the court until you're open thing, except for a lot slower and as a four. And it was really cool to see, and it made him really effective. It's why he won the MVP, is because he's sitting there running around. I mean, jogging around, but he's tiring out these big defenders that you've got to put on him because he's 6'10". And once they're tired and he's got that inch of space that he needs, he's shooting it. He's gone.
I'm really interested in him because he's extra. He's a bonus. We didn't trade anything for him. We traded a second round pick.
We did. Keep talking. I'm going to bring up a fun fact about that. But
we traded a second round pick, which was end up being Isaiah Mobley. The Cavs gave him the rights. He comes over. It's like nothing extra, or it's all extra. And we're not losing anything. So he's just an extra wing. And that kind of size, I felt like we really needed. I felt like we had all the guards in the world. But guys that were like 6'8", it was Barnes and a rookie, which was Keegan. And that was like, the well run ran dry. And so another guy that can have just shooting and size. I mean, even if he's awful defensively, shooting and size will get you playing time. And I'm excited to see that. Also, his passing seems really capable. Just this offense is already so dangerous and already runs so many like fun sets with like triple option handoff shit. And just have another guy that can lace threes and make those passes, I think we're going to have the best offense in the league again.
The trade that Sasha was included in that Isaiah Mobley trade, which was nothing. But the pick that Sasha Vezenkov turned into was actually originally moved in a very big and important trade in NBA history, which Sasha Vezenkov's pick was the second rounder that the Celtics gave up to the Nets when they gave up Garnett, Pierce, Jason Terry, DJ White. It's the same pick.
Wow.
That was the pick. So when
that floated way that over. Okay.
Yeah.
This is a long time brewing.
It's a decade ago.
When Sasha Vezenkov wins finals MVP, they'll be talking about that trade.
Exactly. That whole trade, now that all the draft picks have been made, is just star-studded. I don't know if you've ever looked at it, but the picks involved with that trade were guys like Kyle Kuzma, Markelle Fultz, Jaylen Brown, Colin Sexton, Gerald Wallace, James Young were all the guys drafted as a result of that trade.
Gerald Wallace.
That one might be wrong.
He was the big ass.
No, he was part of it. He was part of it. It was James Young.
Gotcha.
But Jaylen Brown, Sasha, Kyle, all these big guys.
Oh, no. Do you remember when the Kings traded the pick that became Jason Tatum?
Oh, yeah.
For fucking nothing? Like the worst trade of my life? I've seen a lot of bad trades. That was the worst one. It's like the Kings salary dumping to win like 30 games. Like, okay. Right on. Like, I don't know what the fuck we're thinking. Let's touch on some more bench guys. I've dug Davion Mitchell's grave.
Oh,
it's in my backyard. Yes. In the dick. It's all ready to go. He just needs to get in it first. Mm. Are you there yet? We're talking about a 25-year-old. There's no potential. Like there's nothing better coming. He is what he is. And like I said earlier, people get caught up in the age and they forget to check if the player is good. He's young. He's just not very good. I don't think he has... His issue is he is the size of a point guard and has no point guard skills. He can be a fun novelty player. He is a fantastic defensive player. He will be in the NBA. He'll be in the NBA. Dude can't score. But you know what's crazy, though, is he can... He has moments where I think he has the best handles on the team.
He does. And he has moments where he can score in bunches. Like, there is something.
Yeah, I'm not, like... He averaged 5 points per game last year. Like, let's take a deep breath and be honest with ourselves. I went to the opener. I watched KZ Akpala start. I almost walked into traffic after that game. But the other thing that I saw was Davion Mitchell play the backup point guard. And they put him out there, and he was, like, in. That was clearly their plan. Didn't work out. Like, immediately, I'm like, oh, like, Davion Mitchell could not triple or pass at this rate. He has good handles in a isolation scoring sense. He has like a nasty crossover he gets guys with sometimes. Just breaks him down, throws up that high arcing jumper. But his jumper is just not consistent enough, and he has, for a guard, he has some of the worst playmaking skills in the NBA.
So the only reason why I have some stocks in Davion Mitchell, I haven't fully sold the farm on it, is because I used to be a big fan of his in college, and I was stoked when we picked him up. Aaron, do you have any idea what Davion Mitchell shot from three in college?
I actually don't. I have no idea. I've never checked that.
Do you have a guess?
Oh, sure. Can you give me attempts per game? Is that fair, or does that give it away?
Yeah, I can do that. It was a lot. It was a lot. It wasn't nothing. I'm not going to give you like some bullshit stat here. He attempted over a 30-game season, 141 threes.
Wow.
So that's a lot.
How many games? 30?
30 games, 141 threes. So,
wow. Say he shot... I kind of remember him shooting like...
4.7 threes a game.
I'm going to say 39%.
What if I told you he shot 45%?
Wow. I kind of remember that. Like, I remember him being like this... Them mentioning like he's a lights-up three-point shooter. Why hasn't that translated? Is it simply the difference? Like,
I don't know why. That's why I still got hope, is because he was lethal from three his last year at Baylor. He shot 45% from three, 4.7 attempts a game. That's real production. That's serious production. And he also, for the record, weirdly also had like 200 assists, so averaged about 5 a game there.
Okay, but so you're telling me he has playmaking and shooting skills?
I'm not sold on the playmaking. I was never really sold on the playmaking because, you know, Baylor got to play against a lot of shitters in the Big 12. But the three-point ability, that's a lot of shots. That's a whole, I guess, quarter of a season in the NBA, I guess, of 45% shooting. I think it's somewhere. The problem with him is he's just got this is just maybe an aesthetic thing, but him and Stephen Curry are the two guys that really shoot their big three-pointers like this. Most other NBA players, their three doesn't look like that. But Davion's does, and it doesn't go in. It looks great when it goes in, but it just doesn't. It doesn't. He's putting so much more arc on it than he did in college. I don't know if that's a real thing.
For the audio listeners, Jack is demonstrating a high arcing shot with his hands, which Davion does. He tends to, it's like he puts his entire body into it. Like he flips I wish I could describe it. He almost like crosses his wrists like as he does it. It's
audio listeners, love you to death. Aaron just did a mime of Davion Mitchell shooting the ball.
I did. I wrote down 6-1-2, 6 points, 1 board, 2 assists, 32% shooting, 25 years old, not good. That was my thing. But I'm happy to have him on the roster.
Absolutely. Like, at the very least, he's valuable to have around because his on-ball defense is super good. In the playoffs against Stephen Curry, there are very few people that are – actually, there is basically no one that can handle Stephen Curry in a seven-game series. And there were moments across that playoff run where even Warriors fans were like, holy shit, Davion is defending him.
Mm-hmm. It was so good to see for like the national media to, right. to all watch someone like really guard Steph. But let's talk about the last guy. No, I have two more guys.
Duarte, I think.
Duarte or Trey Lyles? Right? Which one do you want to talk about first?
Trey Lyles is significantly less fun.
All right, we'll do Lyles first and super quick. 27 years old. He's 6'9", 8 points, 4 boards, 1 assist last year. Career best 61% true shooting. He knocks down his free throws. He was a good 3-point shooter. I was really nervous about him last season because the start was pretty rough.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was.
I would describe him as doing nothing. Like he kind of did nothing the whole game. He ran to the same spots that he always does now, but he just wasn't shooting it. But now he seems to have like kind of a green light from three, similar to like a Keegan, like similar to Barnes almost. Like he just gets it and shoots it. And at his size, it was just so good to see a little bit of bigger wing depth.
Trey Lyles has had such an interesting NBA career in terms of his progression. When he got drafted, he was like this wiry wing that guarded Kobe Bryant in his last ever game. Like if you remember that.
2016.
Trey Lyles was the main assignment for that game, which is a weird bit of trivia. But he's gained strength. I don't want to say he's gained weight, but he's definitely gotten bigger and stronger throughout this year's in the NBA. And it's really fun to have a guy who can bruise a bit on the perimeter. He's not a big post scorer at all, but he's big enough where you have to justify putting a 4 or a 5 or even a larger 3 on him on defense. And it allows him to shoot a lot of threes. And that's all we need from him. I think he's 6'8 or something. He's pretty tall. He's 6'9. He's 6'9, 230. He's a big dude.
He is a big dude. I'll ask you a trivia question. What percentage of last season did he play at the center position of his minutes?
That is really interesting. Because he definitely played a lot of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because we didn't have one. Maybe like 30?
40%. It's a big chunk. That's a big chunk. And honestly, we always mentioned the Metu Holmes-Kata rotisserie of bad backup centers.
Rotisserie.
But he was a part of that too. Eventually, we're like, fuck it, dude. Just put Trey Lyles out there. And he was pretty serviceable. Like you said, I mean, listed at 234. He's stocky. He's stout. And 36%. 36% from 3.
See, there you go. That's your solution to the Sabonis at the 4 thing is just put Trey Lyles at the 5.
Do I want a Fox Herder Keegan?
No, I'm gonna keep trying to sell this to you. I really am. I'm not gonna stop.
Okay, I'm trying to think of how we could get Lyles, Vezenkov, and Keegan at the floor at the same time.
Oh, and just like do the anti Warriors and everyone's over 6'9".
All right, from Chris Duarte. 26 years old, 6'6". His rookie season, he averaged 13 points, 4 boards, and 2 assists. Good efficiency, good shooting. This was most notably with Domantas Sabonis on the Pacers. My brother was at the game last night, said that Duarte had some good moments on defense. That's all I care about.
Mm-hmm. Duarte as a defender is really interesting. He's got really great active hands. He sprints around the perimeter. He really seems to give a shit, which is such an underrated aspect of just playing defense. He gets his hands in passing lanes. He disrupts a lot. He's got a nice wingspan. Having him as a defender is really nice. The issue is the streaky shooting.
Mm-hmm.
He's streaky, like really streaky. And I know that's sort of hard to swallow as on the Kings roster because there's a lot of guys who are like that. But he just has a defensive upside that someone like Malik Monk doesn't have.
For sure. He does not. With Duarte, so many times when you're making like fake trades in your head on how this team can improve and how that team can improve, you always say, okay, this team gets this and that team gets that and everybody's happy. But a way teams get better is just catching teams trying to do something else. The Pacers are trying to make the cap space for the Bruce Brown signing. The Kings said, we'll give you 2 seconds for Chris Duarte. And that's basically for free. This did the same thing with Kessler Edwards we haven't talked about. We were paid to take his contract because the Nets were trying to orchestrate all these like Durant deals and stuff. That's how the Kings are going to get better. And that's why Monty McNair has been so good for us, is he's not just trying to solve like the whole puzzle. He's always monitoring, trying to get guys for cheap. And the fact that we paid 3 seconds to add more wing depth, we're 4 seconds for Vezenkov, Duarte, and Edwards. I mean, it's been such a good turnaround.
It has been. And he's been a plus defender in the league for, at this point, 2 years. I don't imagine it's going to change at all. That's a nice guy to have, period. I love the idea of him starting over Harrison Barnes, though.
Duarte? You're kind of sacrificing size, but...
You're sacrificing a bit of size, but Duarte isn't exactly small. He's 6'6".
But Barnes is, like, strong as shit, though. I don't know if Duarte has that kind of frame.
Barnes is strong as shit, but he's also slower. Duarte's a lot quicker. He's probably a better perimeter defender than Harrison Barnes. Harrison Barnes is better the second you're banging in the post or you're guarding someone on the interior. But for running around the outside, I think Duarte is definitely the guy. I wouldn't think of a Duarte full starter. A lot of teams will do like a faux starter thing. And
yeah.
Duarte will be in the starting lineup and maybe in the closing lineup, but he's only playing 17 minutes a game. And you have Harrison Barnes like playing like, yeah, exactly. You've got Barnes playing like 20 something off the bench and leading that second unit, providing that veteran presence to a more younger bench.
A little Malik Monk, Harrison Barnes bench unit. I could be interested. All I'm hearing is the Kings are super deep.
Kings are super deep. There's guys we haven't talked about.
Yeah. We didn't mention
Kobe Jones.
Kobe Jones. Kessler Edwards.
Jones is interesting. Jones might be something.
Tell me about it.
He in college was a really interesting larger point guard. He's really great at working with screens. And he showed that recently in the preseason game. He's been burying some deep threes off screens. I think there's a player here. He hasn't played a lot of big competition in college. He went to Xavier. He needs reps. I don't think this is his season. I think he's going to stick around though.
I'm all in, really. We're winning 50 games. Let's just take a brief look.
50.
At the Western Conference. Currently, I had the Kings as a 47-win 6 seed. They are tied with the Wolves at 47 wins. I just felt like in my head the Wolves would beat us, so I went with them.
Really?
Nah. Don't put too much thought into that.
All right.
Have you changed your predictions for the Kings at all? Because I originally had them at like 46 wins, and one win is a big difference. So instead of a 46-win 9 seed, I'm doing 47-win 6 seed.
I was pretty in a pretty similar ballpark, 47, 48 wins. I think I was a little bit higher in terms of seeding because I think we'll be pretty good in the regular season because of our depth, maybe the 4th or 5th seed. I'm projecting the Clippers to fall a little bit further than you are and the Warriors to lose a game or two more than you are, which is probably why I've got them up there. But I think we'll be pretty damn good in the regular season. Being able to run a roster that has 12 guys you're not really scared of getting in the game at any point. Like the 10 guys we talked about, I'm okay if Kobe Jones is getting some spot minutes. I'm cool if Kessler Edwards is in the game. That's not going to scare me a little bit. A team like the Warriors, I think you're getting a little freaked out if Jerome Robinson is playing minutes. And he's terrible. He's not good. And he's like the 8th guy on that team, you know?
Yeah. He was awful last night.
Awful. He's not good.
That's all good to hear. All right. Hour and a half done. Thanks for being here, Jack. Where can the people find you?
People can find me on TikTok at JackTheKingsFan and on Twitter at JackDamnKF.
And you can find me, Possible Chairs, on TikTok and this podcast all the time.